The Gospel is from Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 8, 14 and 15, and 21 through 23. Now when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around him, they noticed that some of his disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, thus observing the tradition of the elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And there are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups, pots, and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" He said to them, "Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines.' You abandon the commandment of God and hold to human tradition." Then he called the crowd again and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. For it is from within, from the human heart, that even in evil intentions come: fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person." The word of the Lord.
I wonder if any of you remember, who are grown up now, remember being a child and being maybe in a similar scenario where, I know I said this at a time when I was a kid, where you're a kid and it's maybe around Christmas time or it's coming up to your birthday, and there's that one toy that you want more than all the others. And so you figure out what it is and you run up to your mom or dad and you say to them, "Please buy me that toy. If only you'd buy me that toy, I'll never ask for anything again. I'll be perfectly happy." Well, is it a true claim? Of course it's not a true claim, right? We think it is at the time when we're kids. We think if we just have that one toy, we'll be happy. But of course, by the next week, we pretty much are on to a new toy. There's something else we want. I remember being a kid and asking for a Batmobile, and I had this whole song about how I wanted it, and I got it, and as soon as I opened it, the story goes that I said, "Someday I want Hawkman." You know, so this is how our desires go when we're kids, and we may think of that as kind of childlike behavior, but I think really this kind of thinking often continues into our adulthood. We say to ourselves, "If only I had this, then life would be good. If only this one thing was different about my life or about the world, then I would have a sense of peace." We say this to ourselves when there's something we want to buy. Husbands say it to wives, wives say it to husbands. You know, can you imagine the husband who goes to his wife and says, "Come on, honey, let me buy the boat, and if you do, I promise I won't ever ask for anything again, and I'll be a perfect husband." Probably not true. We say this to ourselves when something is going wrong in life, right? Maybe we appeal to God. We have an illness, and we say, if only I could not have this illness, if only you'd heal me, then I would have peace. Or we say, if only I looked this way instead of that way, then I'd be happy and content with myself. Or if only I could get that good grade in school, or that promotion, or that raise, then I would be happy. So this is the kind of story we tell ourselves, but again, is it likely true? No, it's not true, right? Is there any one thing we could change about the world, and if we changed it, we would be perfectly joyful and happy and at peace? No. The world and our lives are never going to be perfect enough to give us reason to be perfectly happy, because the world is inherently imperfect, and not only that, but we are inherently imperfect. And even when things are going well and we're happy for a while, something's going to go wrong eventually, and it'll bring us this sense of non-peace and desire and all these things. So that's just kind of the way life works. And so we tell ourselves often that the key to inward peace is outward solutions, things we change about the world or things we change about ourselves if only we could. But what if in reality, inward transformation is the key to peace? Not changing things out there, but being changed from the heart outward. That's what I'd like to ponder with you today. And I think this idea of inward transformation is what Jesus is partially talking about in today's gospel reading. In this story, Jesus is having a dispute, as he often did, with the Pharisees. The Pharisees were religious leaders of the day, and they were very much into rules. For them, religion was primarily about the rules and outward behavior that allowed you to be righteous in the eyes of God. And so they had lists of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rules, and they pretty much knew them all, and they would debate which ones were most important. And some of them had come from the Bible, like the Ten Commandments. And many other rules they just sort of made up and said, this seems like something God would think. And so they would make up even more rules of what you had to do to be a good, righteous Jew. So the Pharisees preached that you need to make sure that everyone can see outwardly your righteousness in the things that you do. Make sure you follow the rules. And if you do, then you will be righteous in the eyes of God. And then you will have peace. But Jesus didn't always see things this way. The Pharisees said things like, don't do any activity on the Sabbath, no matter what, no matter what emergency. But Jesus says in a different story that, you know, sometimes you need to break that commandment. Sometimes you might need to do something on the Sabbath if it means saving a life. And so Jesus has a dispute in one of the stories where he heals a person on the Sabbath who's in mortal danger. And he has a dispute with them because he says, look, to bring life is what we should be doing on the Sabbath, even if it's doing work. And today we hear about the Pharisees saying, don't eat a meal unless you've ritualistically washed the food and washed your hands. Well, what is this about? You know, Jesus argues with them here. And, you know, is it that Jesus is anti-hygiene? No, because this rule wasn't so much about hygiene. It was about religious ideas of inclusion and exclusion, of who's righteous and who's not righteous. You see, the Pharisees had invented a rule that said you needed to, if you're a good Jew, make sure that you washed your hands and your food because your food might have been touched by a non-Jew, by a Gentile. And of course, the reality is, as Jews went to the market, they bought food that had been grown by people who weren't good Jews. And there was this idea they had that if you consumed food or didn't wash your hands after eating it that had been touched by a Gentile, it was kind of like you were contaminated. It was like you had Gentile cooties, right? And you had to get rid of them. And so you wash your hands and you wash the food as a way of separating yourselves from the people you saw as unrighteous, from the Gentiles. We will wash away the impurity of other people by washing this food and washing our hands. And this will make us acceptable to God. Well, Jesus comes back and he says that what needs to be cleaned is not primarily our hands, but what needs to be cleaned and transformed is primarily our hearts. He says, no matter what we look like on the outside, and even no matter what rules we follow, which make other people think we're good, what's most important is whether or not we've had an inward transformation. Because sometimes from the outside, it looks like we're clean, it looks like we're righteous, it looks like we have it put together, but on the inside, we're sick, and we're flawed, and we're in need of all kinds of healing. So the Pharisees, if you think about them, they were kind of like the moral police of their day, always calling other people out for their sins, but not very eager to take reflection about their own sins and the ways that they could grow. And Jesus liked to point out to the people who love pointing sin out to others that they needed to spend more time looking in the mirror and doing self-reflection and less time judging others, because Jesus said that they had a lot to learn about God's love. And that's the strange thing about moral police all throughout history. Have you ever noticed that the people who are most comfortable pointing out the sins of others often have all kinds of stuff that they're struggling with that they don't want to talk about? We've seen these phenomenons where there was a guy in the 80s who was the big focus on the Family Guy. Actually, this was in the more recently. He was focused on the Family Guy, and he was all about family values and doing good things and anti-homosexuality. And then it turned out he was buying prostitutes and doing drugs. There was another guy who was a part of the moral majority team who was also kind of preaching this message, and it turned out he was having an affair. Now, my point isn't that we should celebrate the downfall of people who might have done hypocritical things, not that we should celebrate people when we discover that they're flawed, but we do need to be careful when we're so eager to fix the flaws of other people out there and then less eager to look at our own flaws and work on ourselves and work on our own need for healing. And there's no doubt that in today's society, we are quick to want to change the world out there, but often very unwilling to be changed ourselves. We live in a world where doing things is more valued than what we're becoming. We want to see results in the world out there, and we want to see them now. And we want the world's problems and our own problems to be solved and to disappear, and yet we fail to realize that inward transformation of our hearts is really the heart of our problems. After all, if you look at a lot of the world's problems, they begin in the hearts of people, not in the problems out there. There's hatred in the world because people have hate in their hearts. There's hunger in this world because our hearts are not generous towards people in need. There's inequality in the world because sometimes our hearts are greedy. There's estrangement in the world between people because our hearts are not always forgiving. A lot of the problems in the world, a lot of the worst problems that we say, what can we do about them, begin in our hearts. And so Jesus today says that it's in our hearts that God begins to work out the solution, that God begins to work out healing. Now, there's actually a word for the posture of being open to God's healing spirit. Right? There's a word for this idea of letting God enter our hearts and heal us. The word that we often use is spirituality. And spirituality is an underutilized resource in today's world. And it's underutilized because we think we don't have time for it or we think we don't need it. We tell ourselves that, yeah, it's a good thing, but you know, I don't have time for spirituality because I have some more important work to do. But in today's reading, Jesus says no to us, right? Jesus says that the work that is most important that needs to be done in our lives is the inward transformation that God does in our hearts, which happens through a commitment to spirituality. And so things like prayer, things like exploring God's word and being in Christian community and worshiping together and sharing in the Lord's Supper, God uses spiritual practices like these to bring about inward transformation that slowly reforms who we are. These are practices that open our hearts to Jesus Christ and allow us to experience this peace that Scripture says surpasses all understanding. And that's one of the interesting things about inner peace versus peace in the world. When God is living in our hearts, we can experience peace even when the world around us is not peaceful. When we're relying on peace on the outside, even when it's happening, even when things are good, if our hearts aren't at peace, we cannot be at peace. That's why there's so many wealthy people who are deeply dissatisfied. That's why there are people with beautiful families, and yet they're not happy. But it's this inward peace that allows us to experience peace even when things outside in the world aren't that peaceful. I think about when we served in Kenya for a year, there was a lady we met named Virginia who was a teacher at a school that I was volunteering at. And she invited us over at her home once, and she had two children who were in grade school, and she was a teacher, and she had her house. It wasn't anything fancy, but it was enough, and they had the things that they needed. But she was a single mother. She explained to us that there was a husband out there somewhere. They were still married, but that he had hit the road. He was no longer in the picture. And so she was a single mother. And yet, as she talked about her life, she said, "You know what? I am blessed because God is with me." Right? That's an example of inner peace. And it doesn't really make sense in the context of the world, because as I think of single parents, I don't necessarily think of them as blessed. I'm lucky. I'm a parent who has two little children, and there's two of us who raise our children. My wife is at home with the kids, and she's with them probably more than me. And when once in a while she goes out and catches a few hours, and I'm at home with the kids taking care of them maybe for 3 or 4 hours, man, it is exhausting. And by the end of 3 or 4 hours, I'm like, when is my wife going to come home and help? This is tiring. And we've talked before about, you know, if you're a single parent and you're supposed to juggle a job, I mean, how hard must that be? And so it doesn't seem like a blessing, and yet Virginia, because she had a strong sense of faith and spirituality, was able to say in the midst of this reality that, you know what, I am blessed, and that is inner peace. I remember someone else who I went to seminary with, and he was a deeply spiritual guy, and he went away for a while because his father was getting very ill. And it turned out while he was away that his father died. And so he spent a few weeks away from us, and then he came back a couple weeks later, having done the funeral for his father and stuff. And when I saw him, I said, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss. And my friend said to me, you know, don't be too sorry. As my father died, we gathered around his bed, all of his children, all of his family, and in that hospital room, we sang hymns to him until he died. He said it was a beautiful time of sending my father to God. And that's inner peace. That's when you can look at even death and have a sense of hope in the resurrection. It's a peace that doesn't always make sense in terms of what's happening in the world, but in the sense of faith, it makes sense. And so inner peace is so vital for this inward transformation. And of course, having this inner peace, I don't want to make it sound like this makes us immune to pain or immune to grief or any kind of life's challenges. Of course, we still go through stuff that's painful. But it does mean that in the midst of challenges, we have hope because we have Christ. And Christ promises to be at work in us, transforming us from the inside out, calling our hearts deeper and deeper into his love, and giving us a peace that surpasses all understanding, that no one can take away. Amen.